Lowe's knows that saving is always top of mind, especially this season. That's why we've picked some great deals for early Black Friday. Get free select DeWalt, Kobalt, or Craftsman tools when you buy a select battery or combo kit. More tools? Why not? Plus, we've got select pre-lit artificial Christmas trees starting at $59.98 because it's never too early to think Christmas. Get Black Friday prices without the crowds. Lowe's, we help. You save. While supplies last, selection varies by location.
It is Ryer on YouTube, and it is time once again for Second Helping, the show of choice for fans and followers of the number one league in all of collegiate athletics, the Southeastern Conference. I'm Travis Ryer, longtime Alabama and SEC football analyst, joined by a guy I've known for over 30 years now, Mr. Brent Beard, college football analyst, most recently for First Coast News down in Jacksonville, Florida. Brent, also an esteemed voter for the most prestigious individual honor in collegiate athletics, that being, of course, the Heisman Trophy. And Brent, do we have a weekend for you? We've got, 14 teams in action.
Yeah.
Not all of it is conference play. We've got some non-cons that you get this time of year in the SEC. But boy, in terms of marquee matchups and games that will go a long way in defining the SEC championship game and also the college football playoff. It's interesting, isn't it? You've got the two stalwarts pre-Texas and Oklahoma in Georgia and Alabama. And who are they playing on the same weekend? Texas and Oklahoma.
Yeah, absolutely. Both games expected to be great games. We will wait and see about that. But again, I think this is a precursor of what we're going to see next year in the draft. There's going to be nine SEC games. One of those non-con games is supposed to be a stellar one, shall we say. So, just a lot going on and still a whole lot to be determined in the SEC.
No doubt about it. It feels like there is so much to be decided and there's only three more weekends.
Yeah.
It's like, how are we going to figure all this out? And I think that's why it was appropriate that this week we saw the Southeastern Conference go ahead and get out those SEC championship game tiebreakers because we might very well need those pending the action over the next couple of three Saturdays. Hey, by the way, you can chime in live on our show chat. We are live here on Ryer on YouTube. It is Tex Tider. He's chiming in already. Howdy, boys. He says, Tex.
Hello, Tex.
Tex, good to hear from you as always. If you haven't subscribed to Ryer on YouTube, go ahead and hit that subscribe button, by the way, and hit the notification bell. That way you're alerted to all of our content as it drops here on the channel. Also, if you'd hit us with a like, thumbs up. There it is. Thumbs up would help us out tremendously as well. This is the second of three shows on Ryer on YouTube today. We had No Sleep Teal this afternoon with Evan Ryer talking Jacksonville Jags.
Oh, geez. Oh, man. Oh, Lord.
And some NFL with Ev. Still a lot of fun. Now we're doing with our great friend Brent Beard some second helping, some SEC talk. And then coming up after second helping, we're going to have Talking Tide with Chase Goodbread of the Tuscaloosa News. So a triple Lindy, as it were, of programming here on Roy R. Ryer on YouTube. So, Brent, let's get right into it in terms of the action for week 12 as we outline these games. And right out the gate, South Carolina, a beleaguered South Carolina program right now, set to travel to College Station, take on the absolutely rolling Texas A&M as the third-ranked team in the latest college football playoff rankings, the highest-ranked SEC team, I'd say deservedly so at this point. We did talk about this a little bit on Talking Tide Sunday night with Chase Goodbread, pointed out that, you know, we haven't seen Texas A&M. We're not going to see Texas A&M against Alabama. We're not going to see Texas A&M against Georgia. We're not going to see Texas A&M against Ole Miss in the regular season. There's a few others. Tennessee, I guess, Vanderbilt in that mix too. But I'll tell you, the eye test tells us that Texas A&M very much for real.
There we go. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean, they are really rolling along. And unfortunately for South Carolina, in SEC road game, scoring 14 points per game, Trav, that's not going to to get it, frankly, and that's going to be a difficult thing. Now, again, what's been pointed out this week is that A&M's SEC opponents are a combined 8-27. So does that mean they played the best in the league? No, but I will say that Marcel Reed, the quarterback, two very good wide receivers, a good running back, offensive line. I could go on and on. And the Aggie defense, look, by now, folks who follow us would know that A&M would normally be headed to another, what, Trav, 8-4? Well, that ain't happening this year. Now, again, we're not saying they're going to win the national championship, but for what they have done, they have been a consistent team that, frankly, probably a lot of the upper echelon teams in the league would rather not have to play this year.
Yeah, I don't think it's the worst thing for those teams that we talked about that don't see Texas A&M.
Yeah, really.
And it will also, assuming A&M makes its way to Atlanta, other than Texas, you know, there will be some sort of intrigue again, because we'll be seeing A&M against one of these other teams for the first time. We won't have a rematch. It doesn't look like if that game involves A&M in Atlanta, because if it's Georgia, if it's Alabama, somehow Vandy or another team, Ole Miss, the Aggies don't see those teams in the regular season. 19.5 points. I thought it actually might be more than that with A&M as the favorite. But more to your point about A&M's past failures in the month of November, as we talked about, this team feels like it's very much built for the regular season's final month. And then you get into championship season beyond that.
Well, and Travis, one thing that really stuck out to me, A&M has gained over 400 total yards for the 8th straight game and logged his 3rd consecutive game with 200 plus yards rushing and receiving. I mean, that is, just true balance in a lot of ways, which makes them so much harder to deal with at this point. And what a tremendous really start that they have gotten. And this is a team that could do some real damage, possibly in the playoffs.
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. They're balanced. They're more explosive than I think people realize. I think kind of the X factor is going to be Marcel Reed throwing the football, I think, with his legs. And he is I think he's a better passer than he probably gets credit for. But if they have a shortcoming potentially, if they really put into a position where they're down double digits in a second half, that could be problematic. Now, they were down at Notre Dame on the road.
Yeah, they were.
Came back and won that game. It just seems like it was so long ago. People tend to forget that, but absolutely. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you something else they can do, and you've talked about this on the show a good bit. If they get you in third down, it's over. You're coming off the field. Now, again, maybe competition plays into that some in terms of, you know, who they've gotten off the field to this point. But it's been very impressive. 24.1% opponents are converting third downs against this Aggie defense.
And listen, we have time to deal with this, but I mean, Trav, how much hype is that Texas game going to be with A&M, frankly, and Texas really playing well? We'll get into that in a few minutes, but look, I agree with you. I think the constants for them have been the improved play of Marcel Reed and how good their defense can be at times too.
Yeah, really, really, really disruptive defense under Mike Elko. And again, a team that has certainly taken on the impression of its head coach in year two. By the way, We talk about A&M's third down defense. South Carolina converting thirds at just a 32.5% clip. And there's rumblings about Lenore Sellers and where he might be next year. You know what? I don't envision South Carolina moving on from Shane Beamer after this season, but with a game like this, and then knowing that Clemson is still down the road to cap the regular season, even if Carolina decides it wants to keep Shane Beamer, I'd be interested to see if there's going to be a coach or two that we're probably not thinking about right now that's going to move to another job. That's going to be this year's Brian Kelly, right? Or a situation similar to that. I don't know if it's going to be Shane Beamer, but it's going to be very, very interesting to watch here down the stretch with the Gamecocks. So let's keep it moving. Arkansas and LSU. Arkansas getting 5.5 on the road in Baton Rouge. Boy, LSU once again, we talked about this on Talking Tattoo. Seems like every game for LSU is in that 20 to 10 range, whether LSU wins the game or LSU loses the game. And speaking of numbers, what about this Brian Kelly situation that continues? didn't they actually have a formal press conference to announce the firing?
Yes,
didn't they do that? Did I dream that? And now they're going back and saying, well, we never really fired you, so now we want to separate with cause, in other words, to perhaps save tens of millions of dollars on Kelly's buyout.
Well, and when the Trav, when the lawsuit is being reviewed by the attorney general, what in the world, Trav, you and I have been following LSU since the early 90s, easily, as far as what we do in sports. Does anything ever surprise you that comes out of Baton Rouge? And the other situation is, do they not understand that, you know, prospective coaches kind of watch these things? And I know if you can that they're going to pay you a lot of money if you go to LSU, but what kind of look is that if you're a coach who's considering coaching the Tigers next year?
Well, they hired a new AD, and then they didn't hire a new AD, and then they did hire the AD.
True.
Now I know they had an incoming president situation and all that. Then they fired. Well, first they fired the football coach. Then they didn't really fire him. Now they're getting rid of him with cause.
Yeah.
It's a bad look right now. And on the football field, I think this will be a very competitive game.
I agree.
I think Arkansas offensively can put LSU in a bind. You know, for an offense that has struggled to score points this season, Bobby Petrino will still have something cooked up with Talon Green and the rest of that offense. I'm left to wonder at this point, following the latest loss at Alabama last Saturday night. Again, I thought the psyche of that team in game one under Frank Wilson was fine. I thought they hard and – you know, they still struggle to get out of their own way, but there certainly was no evidence of being a little bit let down by the dismissal of Brian Kelly. And I didn't really think that would be the case anyway. But as those losses continue to pile up, now you're looking at uncertainty at the quarterback position. What about Frank? Coach Frank just went ahead and made the change. Mid-game to Van Buren. I thought Van Buren showed some nice things.
He did.
But, man, with everything that's going on around this LSU program right now, just thinking ahead to next year, really no idea who the head coach is going to be.
And
what that roster's even going to look like.
And look, I still will say, even now in the midst of this chaos, they've still got one of the better rosters in the league.
They do.
Frankly, I mean, they've got dudes everywhere, as we like to say, but I thought it was important Van Buren was able to get in the game, 5 of 11, ran for 21 yards, and that was ran for more than that, but sacks take a lot of it away along that line too. So, but, and it really makes you wonder, Trev, Will we see Garrett Nussmeier much at all the remaining of the year? Will they go with Van Buren just to try to get something set up for next year? It's a difficult time for the Tigers right now.
It is, and I think 10 years ago you'd look at this and say, yeah, they'll go ahead and rep up Van Buren. Whoever's next at LSU will inherit a quarterback that got some work. But we don't even know where Van Buren's going to be next year. The whole playing for next year thing that used to be a very real thing, it doesn't really translate anymore in the transfer portal era and with the freedom of movement that these guys have. So I do like Arkansas, though, in the 5.5. I'm not necessarily picking Arkansas outright. I just think Arkansas has been in these sort of 3-point games all season long.
Yeah,
they have been on the wrong end of them. Mm-hmm. So
yeah,
I feel pretty safe, actually, in thinking Arkansas, win or lose, this is going to be another one of those situations for the Razorbacks. And with Arkansas, what do you hear there? Do you hear some James Franklin maybe a little bit with that? And is it still a possibility that Bobby Petrino could come out the other side of this and be in that job on a full-time basis again?
Yeah, I think if they want to go the easier route, they could do that. And the reality is, I mean, offensively, they have been pretty lethal in some ways. They've really struggled, as we know, defensively. So do they stick with Petrino, hoping they can rebuild this defense next year? Have they seen enough of potential with this right now? So, look, I think this is an important game for Petrino, frankly, that this, as big a rivalry as this has been over the years, that it would be a big win for him to be able to get it.
Yeah, he's got to get a win or two somewhere.
Yes.
You know, just being competitive and, putting solid offensive performances out there isn't going to be enough. And certainly that second half offensive performance against Auburn a few weeks ago was pretty disastrous. Yes. Hey, let's talk about the 1:30 Eastern game in the Southeastern Conference. It involves Tennessee Tech traveling to Kentucky. Kentucky now, after that blowout of the Florida Gators last Saturday night in Lexington, looking for its third straight win. Knocked off Auburn, knocked off Florida, and now, I don't know if a lot of people realize this, this is a 10-0 Tennessee Tech FCS team that's going to be at Kroger Field on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. An undefeated team that is not going to be easy at all. Now, the problem is Kentucky has looked pretty good. I mean, they've lacked a lot offensively, particularly with the Auburn win, but it was still an important win for them. So, Trev, where is their head going to be? Frankly, after two decent wins, what they don't need to do is go backwards. And it was quite a scene after that Auburn game with the Kentucky brass hugging their head coach at midfield. We're not quite sure what to make of that as far as his future is concerned.
No, and Kentucky got a chance. You know, win this game. They're at 5 wins.
That's right.
The problem is, in back-to-back weeks, they're going to go to Vanderbilt and to Louisville.
Yes.
At the regular season. Yeah. So as we've talked about, because of the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, in a lot of ways, what used to be a 6-win season for teams like Kentucky turns out to maybe be 5. Get the 5th win here and then see what you can do against Vanderbilt.
Sure.
The Louisville Cardinals in that rival game. Louisville feeling the effects of an upset loss at the hands of the Cal Bears over the weekend. You know, it seems like all these coaches that we see a good bit on these hot boards had some just really rough losses.
Well, they did, didn't
last
they?
Weekend, didn't we? I mean, Jeff Brohm at home to Cal. Drink has been kind of in a spiral now at Mizzou. Some of those hot names maybe haven't been all that hot here in recent weeks. So we move into that 3:30 window on Saturday. And the Alabama Crimson Tide going to host the Oklahoma Sooners. 3:30 kickoff, ABC. Brent, boy, there are so many scenarios in how this next 2 or 3 weeks could play out for both of these teams. Mm-hmm. But for Oklahoma, it really is win or go home at this point. Alabama certainly doesn't need to sort of FAFO and find out by dropping a game like this and still having to go to Auburn and kind of see how the SEC thing plays out as well. But the Alabama Crimson Tide went to Norman last year with everything on the line and laid an absolute egg. We've heard talk about get back this week for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Oklahoma coming off a bye week after knocking off Tennessee and Knoxville. I guess as much as anything, the health of that Oklahoma front seven at a couple of spots going to be something to keep an eye on here in the next couple of days. The player availability reports will be more of a thing tomorrow, Friday. And as we get closer, I guess, to game day in Tuscaloosa.
Yeah. And Bama last week, just 100 yards of offense and 3 points in the second half, still able to win the game. Ty Simpson, still very effective. Man, he missed a couple of longer passes by not much that would have really turned the game. Still unable to run the ball. I mean, we're familiar with LSU and Alabama's history. LSU in the previous game, they had 59 yards, Alabama 56, rushing. I mean, Trav, we could name 10 guys who are incredible running backs for Alabama and LSU, and that's all they were able to do. So Oklahoma tackles for loss this season, 97. That's better than Indiana's 85. So, fortunately, I think for Alabama, the game is in Tuscaloosa. A huge game for both of these teams. And my question is, can Bama muster something running the ball? We know where their strength is in being able to throw it, but don't you have to do something against this Oklahoma front, Trav, and running the ball just to keep them a bit honest?
Well, good luck, because Oklahoma is allowing just 82.4 rushing yards per game. Oklahoma has allowed a league low 4 rushing touchdowns so far this season. So, you know, if you're struggling to run the ball against the South Carolinas and, some of the other teams on your schedule, and Alabama through 9 games has just 1 game in which they've rushed for more than 4 yards per carry. Mm. Man, that's rough. So and again, I've said this many, many times on the channel, and I'll reiterate it as long as I guess I have to. This offense under Kalen DeBoer and, Ryan Grubb, it's not going to be a run game centric approach.
It's not. No.
And I'm at the point where I know they continue to be asked about it. And you don't want to concede anything that, look, we just can't run the ball, especially against defenses like this. But you just got to be who you are at this point. If you're Alabama offensively, you're not going to turn into a 40 runs per game offense. That's not going to happen. Even if they were built in a way to do that, that's not going to happen. That's not who they're going to be. But what they can do, and they still have done well, red zone offense has been good. Third down offense has been good. It's going to be more of a situational run game for Alabama under Kalen DeBoer. Whether you like that or not, if that's not your approach, then you're probably not going to like it all that much. But what they can do is utilize the backs in the passing game. Josh Cuevas, the tight end, and Grubb can draw some things up conceptually that don't allow them to be dictated to. Usually, traditionally, if you couldn't run the ball, then you got dictated to by defenses. Not so much anymore. And I think Grubb does a really nice job of, okay, we can't run the ball that well, but what we can do is take advantage of your aggressiveness. If you're Oklahoma, if you really want to jump on our run game, ball fakes, backs, getting linebackers outflanked, I think a game plan similar to what we saw from Alabama against Georgia is probably what you're going to see more of this week, and trying to get the ball out of Ty Simpson's hands quick, get the ball out on the perimeter to Quavis, the backs. And also, you know what? If you need to go 7-8 man protection against these guys,
yeah,
because Oklahoma can flat out get after the quarterback. Sure can. We know that. You protect with 7 or 8 if you have to, because I think if you do that and you get these receivers into that secondary for Oklahoma,
yeah,
you can hit some big plays. So you do what you got to do to account for the R. Mason Thomases and the Taylor Waynes and, you know, those guys, to give Ty Simpson what he needs to be able to hit these receivers in the intermediate to deeper passing game.
And Trey, my quarterback that I wanted to mention is John Mateer.
Yeah.
I mean, before the hand injury, threw for 6 touchdowns and rushed for 5 in the first 4 games. Since then, Mateer has thrown for 2 touchdowns and rushed for 1.
Yeah.
So that there's certainly a big difference with that. Isaiah Santiga has been his top target, but we know they're good, but at the same time is and I give him credit. He's a tough kid, and he's proven that this year. Trav, do you think he's healthy or healthier, may I say, for this game?
Yeah, I think he'll probably be about what he needs to be. And I think his legs, if the game is tight in the second half, will be a big part of this thing, more so than him throwing the football. Oklahoma, in terms of turnover margin, hasn't been great this year.
No.
So this is an Alabama defense that has shown an ability to take the ball away. Alabama has done a nice job for the most part of taking care of the football. Now, lately, Ty Simpson's had some ball security issues in the pocket. And against his pass rush, that's not where you want to be. Mm-hmm. So, again, he has to take care of the ball in the face of that pressure that Oklahoma is almost certain to bring. I think if Alabama plays fairly clean, I like this matchup actually better for Alabama than I even liked LSU.
Yeah.
Because I thought LSU offensively had the firepower to hurt Alabama defensively. I think Mateer has that elite competitive nature that you want to go against a team like Alabama in Tuscaloosa. But I think, you know, outside of that, Satania, you're right. I love Satania. Man, this is a guy that can flat out get it done. I love the way he plays. He's not afraid of the physicality, or he can be good in the return game too. But I think Ryan Grubb knows what he's up against this week. And for all the messaging and the public narratives and all that about Alabama's run game, you know, my thought would be who you are.
Yeah,
you know, this is you're going to go as far as what you've been will take you. You know, you're not going to transform into 2015 Alabama overnight.
Yeah, really.
So, you know, let your passing game flag fly, I guess, so to speak.
Yeah,
and embrace that and go with it.
Trev, my final question would be, what does Bama do to stymie some of this pressure? Do they put 2 tight ends? Do they put even 2 backs? Because look, trying to slow Oklahoma down, you've got to be able, if you're Alabama, you got to protect your quarterback and tie. What do they do to negate some of that, do you think?
Yeah, I think Oklahoma's comfortable, you know, playing pretty downhill on defense. Well, like CJ Allen and Raylan Wilson, the Georgia linebackers, if you allow guys like that to play within the hash marks for 60 minutes, it's not going to be very fun.
No.
I can promise you that. What you've got to do is make them play more outside the hash marks.
Mm-hmm.
You got to get tight ends matched up on them. You've got to get backs into the flat, and that you've got to get them outflanked. You got to you got to show maybe a tighter formation, condensed formation, and then work something out of that pin and pull to the perimeter. You know, that's the type of stuff you have to do, I think, against this Oklahoma defense, because if you have just one pitch, It can be a very, very long afternoon. Something else, too, for the Alabama defense. Continue to struggle a little bit. Gave one up to LSU. Harlan Berry had a 37-yard run against the Crimson Tide for LSU for in that loss to Alabama last Saturday night. Xavier Robinson for Oklahoma is the guy that can hit the home run. Even though he is, I think, a 239-pound back. You know, he was the guy against Ole Miss that hit a couple of big ones.
Yeah, he did.
And we saw it against Tennessee. I think his last two games, he has carried just 25 times for 124 yards. You know, that's a healthy yards per clip average for Xavier Robinson. He's the guy other than Mateer in the run game that the Crimson Tide will really need to account for. I like Alabama at home. I think it could be retro in some ways. I think first team to 24 could win this type of game. But I do think Alabama's defense will be not necessarily the unit we talk about the most after this game, but it'll have a chance to be the real difference. I wouldn't have said that in week three, by the way. Credit to the Alabama defense for improving over the course of the season.
Trev, win or lose, has his Oklahoma coaching staff done enough to keep their job another year?
We'll see. You know, it's a two-loss team right now, right?
Yeah.
Oklahoma, Ole Miss, and Texas.
Yes.
You drop this one, that's three.
Yeah.
And then let's say Missouri, you know, or something like that. And you're sitting there now at the end of November at, say, 8-4.
Yeah, you're right. Yes.
How does that sit? This is a huge game
for
Brent Venables and Oklahoma in general. But, yeah, it can really kind of switch the vibe and the juice and the momentum for a program if a couple of these in November. I mean, that's how you're defined, November. If you're Oklahoma, Alabama, Georgia, Texas, this is championship month.
It is. Absolutely.
All right. Let's talk about the primetime window. We'll go with New Mexico State traveling to number 23, Tennessee. The Vols, a 39.5-point favorite. If you needed any more validation or an understanding that Diego Pavia and Tim Beck and Jerry Kill and all those guys aren't in Las Cruces anymore, it's Tennessee minus 39.5 against Diego's old team.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And look, they have not done what a lot of their fans want them to do. How motivated will they be? New Mexico State's allowed 267-yard passing per game, 10 touchdowns in the last three games. They ought to be the ball should play well with that. Then they go to Florida, where they haven't won in 22 years. Oh, by the way, so Trev, this game aside, how do you evaluate Tennessee right now? I mean, Joey Aguilar has had some moments. The defense, they had some injuries that hurt them. They didn't win the big games. The fans wanted them to win, but still, I'm going to believe they are slowly building something at Tennessee. Do they need to get better next year? Absolutely, they do. But we'll be very interested to see how this season's appraised at the end of the year.
Yeah, I think you can go ahead and pencil them in at 7-3 after this one.
Yeah,
and so then it comes down to, as you said, the trip to Florida and then the home game against Vanderbilt.
Yeah.
They went out from here and they're 9-3.
Yeah. Right.
Given that fallout post Nico in the offseason.
Yeah.
Kind of adding a new starting quarterback on the move, on the fly, and Joey Aguilar. I think 9-3 is more than acceptable, especially coming off a year in which you did qualify for the college football playoff. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, that performance at Ohio State, I got to think, still rankles some absolutely of the Vol fans out there. But in retrospect, you know, that was the igniter game for Ohio State. I mean, it's not like you lost to a team that the next week went out and lost by three touchdowns. I mean, they ran it from there and won the national championship. So I think 9-3, you know, the difference a lot of years, I think, for Tennessee is 9-3 and 10-2 means you beat Alabama. You know, you beat Alabama and you go 10-2. That steak tastes a lot better.
Yeah, sure it does. You know,
that 10-2 steak with the win over Alabama than a 9-3 with a loss. Also in prime time, or coming up in prime time on Saturday night, you're going to have the Florida Gators traveling to the Ole Miss Rebels. How about that one, by the way?
Oh, my.
With Lane Kiffin and the implications there. And, boy, I'll tell you what, in Northeast Florida, there are folks, and you know this too, because you're here, that are just already convinced that Lane is done to the Gators.
Yeah.
You know, that it's essentially a verbally agreed upon deal with Lane to coach the Florida Gators in 2026. Do you get that vibe?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you hear a little bit of that. You know, where the reality is with that, what we will see, but it's out there, no doubt.
I kind of noted this a week or two ago. You know, the Florida media, and you can get a sense of what they're hearing from Gainesville.
Yes.
Because they will fall in lockstep with the narrative or whatever the feeling is about maybe what's next. And somewhere, somebody down there has clued in some of the folks and said, yeah, Lane's the guy, because it has been lockstep with Lane, which makes the potential for Saturday night in Oxford to be all the more surreal and bizarre, because you're going to have that Florida team as a 14.5 point underdog. And talk about quarterback situations. We get so caught up in coaching movement that we probably don't think enough or talk enough about potential quarterback movement. We already talked about it with maybe Lenora Sellers from South Carolina. What about DJ Lagway at Florida after that performance last week at Kentucky, where he was benched like Garrett Nussmeier was benched? But you know, Lagway still got eligibility. And so you wonder where he might be next year.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Tramiel Jones played a little bit. Now, we don't know what now.
And it wasn't great, by the way.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. But we can pretend a minute. Pretend that it's it is Lane. Well, I don't think that would be a quarterback issue.
No.
At Florida after Lane gets there, frankly. So, and again – the stat that got my look, I'm not that surprised that Kentucky won the game. I am surprised it was 38-7, which, by the way, was the worst Gator loss since 1950 when Bear Bryant was at Kentucky. Travel,
unbelievable how that thing got out of hand
really
as quickly as it did. Yeah, I mean, of course, all of us back in the preseason, Brent, had Kentucky in November with Cutter Bowley at quarterback beating Florida with DJ Lagway. We all had that.
Yeah, sure we did.
We all thought, we all knew that was coming. Florida fan bases are fickle and funny, and that's what makes it great, a lot of it, college football.
It is.
Because you think about the rumblings right now by a faction of the Alabama fan base about Alabama's inability to run the football.
Yeah.
You know, despite the fact that they're sitting there now with an 8-game win streak, 6-0 in the league, and a fun offense to watch. They don't run it, but they're still entertaining to watch with Ryan Grubb dialing it up. Florida fans would love Alabama's situation right now. Florida fans could not care less about a run game. Yeah. They would love to have, you know, Wildcat with Ty Simpson out left and then running down the middle of the seam like he did against LSU, and Jeremy Bernard, a wide receiver, throwing passes. It just is interesting to kind of the differences in fan bases throughout the year. And I'm not saying one's better than the other. It's just, you know, it's the differences.
Yeah.
But I think 14.5 seems low, but then, you know, Florida when engaged, is certainly still capable of keeping this thing maybe a little bit closer than 14.5, but the Rebels just have too much on the line here.
They do.
And I know we said that last year about Ole Miss at this point in the season, but you know, this week, and then Mississippi State on the road. That's really all that's between the Rebels and a very likely visit to Atlanta, perhaps, for the SEC championship game and certainly the college football playoff.
Oh, yeah. Trav, if there's one stat that really sums this game up, Jalen Farmer, who is an offensive lineman, actually not this game, but the Kentucky game, Jalen Farmer played at Florida a couple years or played a little bit. Then he transfers to Kentucky in 24, started every single game. And now, and this week is the reigning offensive lineman of the week in the SEC. I just thought that's a microcosm of what's happened, but boy, between the two schools, that sums it up, don't it?
That's pretty much it. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Let's talk number 10, Texas.
Yes.
At number 5, Georgia, the Dogs, a 6-point favorite. Kind of, again, the similarities between Oklahoma, Alabama, Texas, Georgia. Even the numbers, the lines are about spot on there with the 6-point spreads. This is a 7:30 Eastern kickoff on ABC. Couple of teams that you felt like if they were still in the mix come November, they would perhaps one or both get right, and then you really wouldn't want to deal with either one of them.
No.
And it kind of feels like maybe that's where Texas – and Georgia are right now. And Georgia gave up a touchdown early to Mississippi State, but then just proceeded to dismantle the Bulldogs in Starkville last week. Texas has been on a nice run. The thing I'm going to be interested from the outset on Saturday night from Sanford Stadium, Sark's going to stay with that quick perimeter game has been very, very effective. Mm-hmm. They block it well out there, and they get guys like Wingo in space, and then they hit for these explosive plays. Will they be able to get the easy explosives against this Georgia defense? They've been able to do that of late. Mm-hmm. Not so sure they're going to be able to do it against the Dogs, though.
Yeah, and there's several interesting things here. Texas leads the SEC in run defense. 78 yards a game. Now Georgia allows 100. But I will say this. I give credit. Now Georgia ran for 303 in Starkville. And, look, they can run the ball. I mean, Nate Frazier ran 181 yards on 12 carries. Look, State doesn't have the record yet, but they play some teams, including one Texas team, rather stiffly, I would say. But Trev, one thing that really got my attention, the Georgia defense. Now, this wasn't at the end of the game. This is on the second drive. The Georgia defense against Mississippi State, two seniors, two juniors, and 7 sophomores or true or redshirt freshmen.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting. I like the backs for these teams. I like Trey Wisner for Texas. You mentioned Frazier having a huge game against Mississippi State, but Chauncey Bowens can get it done too. Both these teams kind of similar in their offensive approaches. I don't think a lot of people think of Mike Bobo and think of him as sort of the innovator or script guy that Sark is, but they both like to utilize a lot of different personnel. They both have a place for the tight ends in their offense too. I just think it's going to be a game, again, similar to Alabama and Oklahoma, and maybe even in terms of what it takes to win this game, and a big, big moment for Arch Manning. We feel like we've witnessed his growth more and more over this last month or so. I said it even after the loss to Florida, and his numbers weren't maybe great in terms of taking care of the ball, things like that. But what I just saw from him in terms of his chin in that fourth quarter against Florida, he kept throwing haymakers. I thought that was a really good sign. Mm-hmm. It's not that I didn't expect him to do that, but it was very impressive. Can he continue that growth? I think same thing's true with Gunnar Stockton. I think Gunnar Stockton against Alabama early in the season did not have the appearance of a confident quarterback, especially where letting it rip in the middle of the field or in the intermediate type of middle to deeper areas of the field were concerned. He's looked a lot more like that guy.
Yes.
Of late. And I think Georgia's offensive line has gotten healthier.
No doubt.
Is a big part of this too, Brent. I like the dogs at home.
Yeah, I do too. Now, Trav, let's talk a little bit more about Stockton real quick. Do you think they brought him along at a good clip? I know he got in and played last year because of an injury, and he did fine. In the state game, he was 18 of 29 for 264 and 3 touchdowns. He can run the ball, and he does run a lot, but he is effective with it. I'd be curious what you think as far as how he has matured and how Kirby and the coaches have slowly been able to pave the way for him to get more confidence.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Like we just talked about, you know, I think going back to that Alabama game, it jumped out at people, I think, how much more confident Ty Simpson was.
Yeah, really.
Running that Alabama offense and taking shots and not being afraid or adverse to work in the deep middle and some of those areas where, you know, it requires confidence to do it. And I think he's absolutely shown that growth of late. And, you know, he's continued to develop nice chemistry with guys like Zachariah Branch, London Humphreys. Dylan Bell is the security blanket for the Georgia offense. Going back to the previous situations with Carson Beck, whoever, when Georgia really needs it, 86 is going to be involved. And I think that'll be the case again. I think there's more dependability with Georgia right now than maybe Texas offensively, but explosiveness of late, Texas is really started to kick that in. And, you know, I thought what was impressive for Georgia too against Mississippi State, no Colby Young.
Yeah, you
know, the 6'4" wide receiver's out and has been out, and they still did some really nice things on that side of the football. So I like the dogs over the Longhorns Saturday night on ABC. And we'll wrap things up for Week 12, Brent Beard, with Mississippi State traveling to Missouri. This is Eli Drinkwitz. What he has done at Missouri for the most part is win these kind of games.
Yes.
This game right here, this has been a Drinkwitz special. Now, you talk to those fans out there, he hadn't mixed in enough of the Texas A&Ms from last week or the Alabamas from a few weeks before that. But Drink can pretty much get you home as a 7-point favorite against a team that Missouri is supposed to beat.
Well, to back up what you're saying, Drinkwitz has not won an SEC game against a team that finished with a winning conference record in 3 years. But Trav, the counterpoint is he has not lost a game to a team with a 500 or worse record in SEC play in 3 years. So, they started 5-0. They have they've gone the other way, unfortunately, and a lot of it obviously with quarterback. I tell you one thing, I know they realize this, and the fans aren't right now, but Matt Zollers, their third string quarterback, is getting some valuable time right now.
Yeah, if they can get him to stay,
if
Drink stays, if Kirby Moore stays as the offensive coordinator, there's a real positive future, I think. At the quarterback situation with Zollers. Again, it's the uncertainty in today's college football of, how that's exactly going to happen. But, you know, we talk about running the football, and Missouri has done that at a very high level. And I wouldn't expect that to change this week. Missouri, the SEC's top-ranked rushing offense at 232 yards per game. And then you look at Mississippi State, middle of the pack in that regard. But this has Ahmad Hardy, Jamal Roberts, that Missouri run game written all over it, I think.
One guy for State who's really done well is their wide receiver, Brendan Thompson, All-American type year, Trav. Merciful heavens, 808 receiving yards. six touchdowns. Five of those touchdowns are 40 plus yards, and leads the SEC in catches of 25, 30, and 40 yards. So, I mean, that's he has been the bright spot for them, to put it mildly.
Yeah, and they've gotten some pretty good run game out they of Fluff Bothwell and Davon Booth, you know, and some guys that can do a good job. They've improved. There's no doubt about it, regardless of how this season sort of plays out for the Bulldogs. Even if it is stuck with just one SEC win, they have, I think, in my opinion, certainly improved throughout this season. Now, you know, there's still a long way to go, obviously. And but to my point, you know, Mississippi State, it was in a blowout last week, but they ran for 149 yards. Now they needed 43 carries to get there. So we'll see how that works in terms of State being able to achieve balance. What is the quarterback situation going to look like for Mississippi State as you move through the game Saturday? I'm going to go with Drink here again, though, in a spot where he's been very, very good to get the job done for the Missouri Tigers on Saturday night in Como. Brent, there you go. That's week 12.
Yeah. Auburn is off. All eyes on the coaching search for Auburn. We hear various names. John Cohen has kind of taken that over to his credit. He's had some Zoom calls and talked with some people, probably their agents. In other words, DJ Durkin. And I'm curious if you're hearing what I'm hearing. Look, I'm not saying DJ Durkin's going to get the job, but I think what I'm hearing is they would not be overly upset if he did, how he's handled himself. So now I'm sure they would rather have a little more, quote-unquote, exciting coach, but a lot of eyes are on Auburn to decide to see what they're going to do.
Well, exactly. I mean, we ran this down a couple weeks ago. There's not going to be enough of the preferred options in terms of candidates to coach all these teams.
True.
And so if you look around the Southeastern Conference at some of the coordinators that we ran down on TRN the AM or here or other programs, it's a good looking list. And some of these programs may have to opt for that.
Yeah.
It's interesting because in the NFL, all we ever see are coordinators promoted to head coaches.
Yeah, that's right.
Nobody bats an eye about it.
No.
In the NFL. But in college, if a blue blood or highly renowned or respected program hires a coordinator, the blowback can be severe. Everybody wants the proven winner. Well, there's not going to be enough.
No,
there's not going to be enough proven winners.
Exactly right.
When the dust settles, if it ever settles, it may never settle on this carousel. There's just not going to be enough of those candidates. Brent, no. I don't think. No, I don't know. No. What do you think?
Well, I agree. I agree with that totally. And Trav, just a little bit of love for Vanderbilt. I mean, my stars, you're talking about high cotton for Vanderbilt, 8-2. 8-2 at this point, Trav, after 10 wins. I mean, you and I've seen Vandy for several decades. That hadn't been very many 8-2s after 10 games, have there?
Well, they beat Kentucky. It's going to come down to Knoxville
for them. Yeah, really.
Where the college football playoff is concerned, it could.
Yeah,
absolutely. There are so many different things that could happen in these, again, next two or three weeks that could convolute this thing even further.
Yeah, no question.
It's going to be pretty wild to watch. I mean, we'll talk about this with Chase Goodbread coming up live here on the channel in just a few minutes. The scenarios for Alabama between Oklahoma, road game at Auburn, potential game in the Southeastern Conference Championship game, how all that plays out, those three potential games, two for sure, three potentially, what's good for Alabama, what's potentially hazardous for Alabama where the CFP is concerned. It's crazy. It really is.
It is. But Trav, we got to have a POPS report on the
trip. Oh, yeah.
Was the behavior exemplary or a little less?
No, he is, man, he is just, he is just so, so almost mundane now. He still pops,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But, he'll be 78 next month. So, we did take him up to Wisconsin,
yes,
over the weekend. So we took him to a couple of Bucks games in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. We took him to Monday Night Football at Lambeau Field, where we saw the Packers and the Eagles in sub-freezing temperatures.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I think his favorite part of that was we left the game a little early, and he was able to get a burger and a shake from Freddy's. You know, he got a custard shake. So he really liked that. He liked that. We got a chili dog at Martino's in Milwaukee. He loved that. Says the best chili dog he's ever had. So we made it. We made it.
Yeah. Yeah. And obviously both granddaughters on hand. Yeah. So
they keep him straight. Yeah. They keep him in line.
Yeah. I was gonna say he had to behave one way or another, correct?
Yeah, he thinks he can hand it out, then he gets it back from those two, and he zips it up pretty quick around those granddaughters for sure. Oh, Brent, a lot of fun, my man. I look forward to doing it again soon. And by the way, Talking Tide coming up next live right here on Ryer on YouTube. Brent, fun weekend coming up, my man.
It should be great, bud. Always enjoy it. Thanks for the time.
For Brent Beard, Travis Ryer, thanking you once again for joining us right here on Ryer on YouTube. Go ahead and hit that subscribe button. Hit us with a thumbs up. We'd appreciate that as well. Coming up in just a few minutes, Talking Tide with Chase Goodbread and myself. See you again in just a little bit.